This podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome to The Stand with Eamon Dunphy. Now, the Boris Johnson show continues. The British Prime Minister yesterday faced the House of Commons on the morning that the Sue Gray report into the behaviour of Johnson and indeed other ministers and senior civil servants into the behaviour that they were engaged in whilst having issued laws on lockdown to the rest of the population. In Britain, it's a really shocking story in many ways. The lockdown was severe. People were handed fixed penalty notices, which were effectively crimes. One person was fined £10,000 for having six people in their house. Meanwhile, in Downing Street, there were numerous parties, some of them in which behaviour was really bad. And we're joined now by Chris Johns from London to discuss this. Chris, of course, former chief economist with the Bank of Ireland, now a respected commentator. Chris, the Boris Johnson show has been running for almost 25 years. And during that period of time, he has been involved in a series of scandals, some of them to do with his journalism, where he plagiarised and fictionalised a report from Brussels, some to do with his private life, which is not somewhere we would want to go. And in all of that, he appears to be able to survive things that others wouldn't. What do you make of yesterday and the Sue Gray report in particular, which was many people who don't like Johnson hoped would provide a smoking gun?
Yes, well, there was no smoking gun, as you rightly say, Eamon. And the summary of the Sue Gray report that I have read and I've made some notes from, it smacks of a watered-down version of events. If you were a conspiracy theorist, I'm not, you would say it was a whitewash or part of the establishment cover-up that the Metropolitan Police some think have been involved in as well, because there are so many inconsistencies between, for example, people who are at the same event being fined or not fined, and all of these sorts of things. So I do think that Sue Gray pulled her punches yesterday, didn't provide those of us who do not like Mr. Johnson and would like to see him gone with anything remotely resembling that smoking gun. It was a 37-page report that made for very horrid reading, actually. And I think the Financial Times today puts its overall conclusion very well, which is that the bond of trust between the elected and the electorate in the UK has now been broken. Because whatever you think about Johnson, whatever side of him appeals to you or not, if you're one of the people that vote for him, there are very few people in the UK now who actually think that he hasn't lied to them, that he hasn't lied to Parliament about any of these issues, and therefore he shouldn't be there. So trust, that very important, ephemeral, hard to measure, hard to gauge thing has gone. And so this is an administration, I think, that has lost the trust, as I say, of the British people, as the FT said, And the minutiae of this report couldn't have been more damning in many ways. And I think that, again, from an overarching conclusion, the disdain and the contempt with which these people hold all of us in Britain, yes, both their colleagues in Parliament and the wider British people, is there for all to see. You know, the refrain, there were no parties, nobody would, even if there were, we didn't know that they were going to, that they were parties. It's just one endless nonsense. But I think one of the things that could hurt them, and this may be motivated reasoning on my part, because I think a lot of this deserves to hurt them, the one thing that really should hurt them is the very obvious disdain and contempt illustrated, described in the Sugrey report, that these people from the top down, senior civil servants, senior politicians, staffers at Number 10, their disdain and contempt that they showed towards security staff and cleaners, particularly, yes, in the wake of parties in which people had fights, in which people vomited, in which people poured wine, spilt wine over wallpaper and piles of photocopier paper. The debris of a standard student-level party was there for all to be seen, and the people who were there to clean it all up were treated with something, I think, resembling contempt. So yes, it's not going to damage him in the short term. The longer term is interesting, but there is a parliamentary standards inquiry now that starts next month, and I don't want to say, in the same way everybody said, let's wait for Sugrey, let's wait for the Parliamentary Standards Committee. I think that he's gotten away with it.
Yes, he has. And just in reference to what you've described about the people who were in charge of security and the people who had to clean up after this mess, the party where that was perhaps worst exemplified was on the 18th of June 2020, at a time when British people were in lockdown. They couldn't go and see dying relatives except to stand outside windows and wave to them. Funerals had to be curtailed, weddings cancelled, and all of that stuff. It was really quite severe, the British lockdown. And so the Deputy Cabinet Secretary, Helen McNamara, was leaving. She was the head of ethics. And for her leaving party in Downing Street, she brought a karaoke machine. The party lasted, according to Sugrey, for a number of hours, and it was a raucous affair. And I'm quoting now. There was excessive alcohol consumption. One individual was sick. There was a minor altercation between two other individuals. This is remarkable, because the party went on until 3 a.m. Another party went on until 4 a.m. These were the rule makers, but they were also, it's clear, and it's clear from the numbers, 83 people from Downing Street received 126 fines from the Metropolitan Police. Some of those people clearly having more than one fine. But that was the epicentre of bad behaviour, reckless behaviour and criminality in Britain. No other street had that sort of culture.
Yeah. That Sugrey talks about 16 events, including the BYOB garden party, the birthday party, the event that you just described, not all of which Johnson was at, and all of which contained people who were being fined. As I mentioned earlier, one of the discrepancies that I think is worthy of investigation is the fact that at some of these events, yeah, some of the people at them were fined, and some other people who weren't at the events weren't fined, including Johnson himself. He was at events and not being fined for, but other people were. So there is a thing in the UK called the Good Law Project, which has launched a legal action trying to find out what on earth the Met was thinking, and has the Met actually done its job. I suspect the British establishment, being what it is, will find ways to make sure that that attempt by the Good Law Project is shut down, but we can live in hope. The efforts now being made by the Tory party itself and its friends in the tabloid and Daily Telegraph type media are very, very clear. It's very orchestrated, it's very planned, it's very coordinated. And as an example of which, I can tell you about Andrew Griffith, actually, who is the MP for Arundel, and he is the recently appointed director of the Number 10 Policy Institute. One of the changes that Johnson was able to talk about yesterday, about having cleaned the stables, as it were. And the refrain, whether it's from this guy, Andrew Griffith, who now works for Johnson in Number 10, or whether it's the Daily Mail, or whether it's backbench MPs, or Johnson himself, is the same. Boris Johnson has apologised, lessons have been learnt, decisive action has already been taken. The independent review of Sue Gray has been published, and only one Boris Johnson offence has been found. And it's now time to turn the page and move on. And everything that these people say contains at least one small or large lie. And the lie in that particular refrain is the idea that Sue Gray was independent. She's not, of course. She's a civil servant who works for Boris Johnson.
She works in number 12 Downing Street, actually.
Beg your pardon?
She works in number 12 Downing Street. Two doors
yes,
down.
Yes, very, very, very close. So there's a newspaper that you've probably never heard of, Eamon, called the Northern Echo.
I have heard of it. I spent some of my youth in the North.
Yeah, well, as I say, there are two types of headline this morning. There's the one in the, you know, the Mail, the Express, the Sun, the Telegraph, which is time to move on, or a variant on that theme. And the Northern Echo's headline today was, "There is blood on your filthy, privileged hands."
Yes.
And so it couldn't be... The divide in this country couldn't be put more starkly than that. There are those who think that we should move on, and there are those who are going to have some very long memories indeed. And I think that's the question, is whether or not people will actually remember this when the general election comes around.
Yeah.
And the awful bet that backbench Tories MPs are making is that memories will fade, that this won't be the salient issue that it is today. They would be, I think, short of an election loss if the general election were held today. But they're betting that Johnson is the man to lead them into the next one in a couple of years' time.
Yes, and this old Etonian spiv delivered an 80-seat majority in the recent general election. Well, recent, it seems like he's been there forever. However, Chris, the need they have all the time when he's embroiled in these affairs is for a distraction. One of the distractions this morning is apparently Rishi Sunak is going to announce a £10 billion rescue package to help to ease the cost of living crisis in the UK. And we can come to that in a moment.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com.
real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Another distraction was identified by Richard Neal. Richard Neal is the chair of the Ways and Means Committee in the US Congress. That's the committee that has to sanction any trade deal. And he has been very vocal. He's in Belfast today. He was in London yesterday. And what he said, having met representatives of the British government, is that it is they who have manufactured a crisis to do with the Northern Protocol. He's seen through this. So announcing 10 billion windfall taxes, picking a fight and breaking international law in relation to the Northern Protocol, these are the kinds of things that are dreamt up, if you like, or invented to distract people from what some newspapers call things that don't really matter. But behaviour surely does really matter. And as we see in a COVID crisis, it matters an awful lot because a lot of Britain's decisions cost a lot of people's lives.
Yes, and that's what the Northern Echo was referring to when it said that these people have blood on their hands. The situation with regards to the British government, I think, is peculiar, if not unique, in that it is now a government without any ideas at all.
Yes.
Usually politicians have one or two. Governments always have to react to events. Harold Macmillan told us that. But this is now entirely, 100% an event-driven government. It merely reacts to things that comes its way. And the entire government machine is designed to, A, cope with events as they are being delivered to them, and how those reactions that the government has to events are played out in the media. There is nothing else going on in Westminster at all. There are no big ideas. There are no small ideas. The manifesto commitment, the big idea that they were presumably at least partly elected on, levelling up, that's out of the window, as are any of the other manifesto so-called ideas that they had. So this is, there are always elements of this present in any government, in any country, in any democracy, but I've never seen it quite so extreme. A government utterly, utterly bereft of ideas, and quite happy to be so, actually. There's no great clamour within the Conservative Party for the next idea, for the next strategy, if you like, or economic or social policy. It's about reacting. And Rishi Sunak's 10 billion today, and I have to tell you, Eamon, as an economist, 10 billion in the context of the UK's public sector finances sounds like a lot of money. It isn't.
Yeah.
It's neither here nor there. It's relatively small beer, and it'll be all about smoke and mirrors. And in particular, it'll be about Sunak trying very hard not to give money to poor people via something called universal credit, because he made that mistake during the pandemic and then found it next to impossible, almost impossible, to take away that temporary measure of giving money to poor people. You and I might think giving money to poor people is actually a good idea, but of course not for this particular government. The Northern Ireland Protocol, you and I have discussed that many times, it is just part of that media management piece. It is an opportunity to do two things: to dominate the headlines with a row with the EU, which always plays to the Conservative audience very well. Anything to do with that is great. And the only idea that they have managed to deliver on after a fashion, and not very well, is Brexit. And so if they have a strategy for the next election, it's to fight it on the Brexit thing again, because it won them the last election and it might as well win them the next. Kind of flies in the face of any known logic or reason, in the sense that Brexit is now many years old and it was done a long time ago. But it's the only idea they've got, Eamon. And that plus media management is what the entirety of Whitehall and Westminster is devoted to day in, day out. That's how bankrupt intellectually these people are. Yeah. And that kind of brings me to the last point I'd make about these people. I had to chuckle when I read The Guardian describing Johnson as a consummate art dinner speaker yesterday. You and I have talked about that in many different ways about these people.
Yeah.
But this Tory government is an example of the distinction between education and intellect. Yes. Intellect broadly defined, intelligence in its traditional academic sense, but also emotional and also all the other ways. This is a bunch of overeducated people who've been sent off to places like Eton and Oxford and other, you know, wonderful universities, educated to within an inch of their lives, overeducated, if you like, and are revealing now their lack of intelligence. Education is not a marker of intelligence, and lack of education is not a marker of lack of intelligence. And I think we are seeing ample evidence of this with these hyper-educated people who treat us with contempt and are incapable of generating decent ideas for their own party, for their own party's salvation. Boris Johnson's survival today arises from two reasons. One is when Conservative MPs are asked in the tea rooms, who would you like to replace him? They look at their feet.
Yeah.
Because there's nobody in the frame since Sunak's awful 3 months that he's just had. Jeremy Hunt is making an outside run with some very interesting comments about the Australian election results, actually, and that might be something you'd want to explore. But the other reason why they're not too bothered about Johnson staying in situ, as I say, they can't think of a replacement at the moment, so the better the devil you know, is that they're not at all worried about the Labour Party. Yesterday was notable that the Labour Party didn't lay a glove on Johnson.
There's also the possibility that Sir Keir Starmer, the Labour Party leader, will have to resign because he is being investigated by Durham police for being present at a work gathering where alcohol was consumed as well as a curry. And he has said, and been forced to say actually by one of those newspapers, the Daily Mail, that if he gets a fixed penalty notice, he will resign. It would be the deepest of ironies if this rather sober and dull conformist was forced to resign while Boris marches on to greater success. The other factor here is Britain's place in the world now. They're fighting with the French, particularly. They've alienated the Biden administration seriously over the North of Ireland. And they appear to be almost friendless, with one exception, Chris, and it's an interesting exception, the Ukraine. They were the first European country to provide arms, and they have been robust in their condemnation of Putin, and they have been generous in the support that they've given to Ukrainians, which is an interesting paradox that you might explain to me.
Well, I don't think there is an explanation, really. It's not a complex one. For once, they did the right thing. And just because you and I discuss this awful administration, these awful people, I think they're hyper-educated old Etonian nitwits who hold the rest of us in contempt and disdain. It doesn't mean that occasionally they will stumble on doing the right thing. And I think that doing the right thing for Ukraine, they need to be applauded for. With my cynical hat on, I would question some of the motivation for that.
A distraction again.
Yeah, it was a distraction, but it was also Ben Wallace and Liz Truss competing with each other to out-bellicose each other in this competition to succeed Johnson, if and when he ever leaves office. I suspect you and I will be leaving office before he does, Eamon, to be honest. But the way in which the right wing of the Tory party wanted to be anything other than European about this. And the moment there was a whiff that Europe was going to be slow, the UK was going to be quick. So we're in a world where whatever the EU does, the UK, at least the right wing of the Conservative government, wants to do the opposite. And it helped that the United States has also been extremely generous with its aid for Ukraine, the most generous country in the world by a long shot. And that's the way it's played out, is that A, it was the right thing to do. B, it had the benefits, the nice to have of it being, it stood in contrast to what Europe was doing. It was standing shoulder to shoulder with the United States, which is what all of these backbenchers always seem to want to do. So it was, and this Truss and Ben Wallace, the defense secretary, it was a way to show their fangs, as it were, to their prospective electors on the backbenches of the Tory party, because both people fancied themselves, as I say, successors to Johnson. So credit where credit is due, but forgive me a little bit of cynicism about some of the motivation.
There's also out this week, completely overshadowed by the Partygate business, a report on how they handled their departure from Afghanistan. Dominic Raab was the foreign secretary at the time, and he refused to leave the beach in Greece where he was having his holiday and enjoying himself. And the head of the Foreign Office, the senior civil servant, he also refused to come back from holidays. The net result, this parliamentary inquiry has found, the net result was that tens of thousands of Afghans who had been helpful to the British were stranded, left there at the mercy of the Taliban, which is a truly shocking story that's been absolutely buried by this Partygate business.
Yeah, news management is everything. And provided you keep the deaths and awful things that have happened to thousands of Afghans in the wake of the British and the American departure, then it doesn't matter. I mean, these are the people we're dealing with. Provided it's not in the headlines, it doesn't matter. And that's the cynical depths to which they have plumbed.
I want to ask you another question about sleaze. We know about the Tory MP. There's two by-elections coming up, one in Wakefield, which is in Yorkshire, I think, and one in Tiverton, which I know is in Devon. Both Tory seats, both seats vacancies caused by sex scandals. The one in Tiverton was because the member concerned was watching porn on his mobile phone in the Commons chamber. The other one was far more serious. It was sexual assault on a minor by the Tory who had the seat in Wakefield. He has had to resign and be thrown out of the party because he's gone to prison. So sleaze abounds, as well as all the incompetence and indeed misbehaviour by senior civil servants. Martin Reynolds, the boy who issued the invitations for the Bring Your Own Bottle party, is now moved from his post as secretary to the Prime Minister, and he's moved to the Foreign Office, and he's rumoured to be heading for a nice ambassadorship.
In time-honoured tradition of the British establishment, senior civil servants who failed are often given plum jobs in embassies in places like Paris and Washington and elsewhere. So nothing about that surprises me at all.
Now, the question about the sleaze and these two by-elections and what they might tell us. And just to underline, the relevance to us here is these guys are causing terrible trouble in the north, where there is no government at the moment because their allies, the DUP, won't go into government.
So long as the headlines are that it's all about the EU being terrible people, terrible countries who are causing all of these problems, which is what the tabloids and the Telegraph cooperate with, then the problems that's causing you in Ireland, they don't matter to these people. I keep emphasizing the depth of their cynicism. In terms of how all of this plays with the electorate, the sleaze, the playing politics in Ireland, and all the rest of it, there's a really interesting article. I talked about Jeremy Hunt coming up on the outside in terms of any potential leadership campaign. He's written in The New Statesman this week, which, as you may or may not know, is a very liberal, lefty, centre-left, yes, Labour-ish type publication. And he most interestingly says, look at the Australian elections. And the first thing to say about the Australian elections, of course, is that they were a surprise. It was the ousting of somebody not wholly unlike Johnson in a very unexpected way. And the guy that's replaced the Johnsonian figure in Australia, a guy called Albanese, is like Starmer, a guy who suffers from a terrible charisma deficit. So, you know, lack of charisma isn't necessarily electorally unappealing. But the thing about the lesson from Australia that Hunt is telling his Conservative colleagues is that if you alienate the British, and particularly the English middle classes, the suburban middle classes, who typically are socially liberal voters, you are doing so at your peril.
Yes.
And I think that that is the fear that stalks the Conservative Party, which is that they have alienated the southern blue wall. And then the Tiverton election is going to be very instructive in that regard. The second thing that's going on is that there are there's an awful lot of chatter about implicit, secret, behind closed doors deals between Labour and the Lib Dems about the amount of campaigning yes. they'll do, whether or not they actually will stand up candidates in particular constituencies. Because it remains the case that if the opposition parties in the UK could get their act together, they would muster 65% of the vote. And I think that thought is worrying some Conservative strategists.
Yeah, I just want to finish, Chris, by acknowledging that there are people in the Tory party who are deeply offended. They may have been pushed to the edges of the party or indeed left politics, and some did leave politics, people like Dominic Grieve, for example, former Attorney General. In the Commons yesterday, when Johnson was making his apology, he was addressed by Tobias Elwood, who is a Conservative. He's chair of the Commons Defence Committee, and he already had called for Johnson to resign, and he urged his party colleagues to act. He said, "This is a damning report about the absence of leadership, focus and discipline in number 10, the one place where we expect to find those attributes in abundance. I have made my position very clear to the Prime Minister. He does not have my support. A question I humbly put to my colleagues is, are you willing, day in, day out, to defend this behaviour publicly? Can we continue to govern without distraction, given the erosion of trust of the British people? And can we win a general election on this trajectory?" In a nutshell, that is the big question in British politics now, isn't it?
Yeah, and the Conservative Party, by keeping Johnson in power, is betting that he will be able to win in the next general election because it will be sufficiently far down the road that people have forgotten about what has been happening over the last few days. But the points raised by Elwood are very good ones. And I think that there are people in the Conservative Party like Elwood who are very worried by all of this. But the fact is, since Gray published her report, which if you talk to any Conservative MP or indeed any Conservative activist over the last 3, 4, 5, 6 months, they've said, wait for the Sue Gray report. Well, we waited and we waited like Godot. Yeah. It came, it went, and one additional Conservative MP has put his hand up to say that he has written a letter to the chair of the 1922 committee to say that he no longer has confidence. So the very, very small tribe of decent Conservative MPs who want Johnson out has been added to by one individual, we think. I mean, sometimes they write in secret, but in terms of the publicity surrounding this process, we've had one extra MP say, I've had enough. And I think that speaks volumes.
Can I ask you a final question, Chris, about Britain? What's happening to Britain? What does the existence, survival and prosperity of this clown, this old Etonian clown, his survival, what does it say about Britain? We see even football...
Well, it says a lot about the class system.
Well, but I mean, it's really beyond belief. I mean, we complain about our own government here, but it's inconceivable that Leo Varadkar or Micheál Martin would behave or allow others around them to behave in this manner. It's simply inconceivable. I mean, they have all kinds of flaws, don't we all? But this seems Trumpian. It's institutionalized. This former reality TV star, this serial liar, and worse, how can they celebrate him, put up with him? And what? And the clowns like Jacob Rees-Mogg and Nadine Dorries, who wants to privatise Channel 4 and keeps giving her Netflix password to her friends and her family members. For God's sake.
Well, in the spirit bit of that comment I made about hyper-educated elitist twits, I'll use some Latin, res ipsa loquitur, which is Latin for the thing speaks for itself. It's a term used by lawyers when they are presenting evidence that just speaks for itself. And I think that you have just presented the evidence for the prosecution that 6 months ago, it's not just about Ireland not contemplating something like this. If you'd said a year ago, the events that were detailed in Sugre's reports would be made public, there wouldn't have been a single person in this country who would say that any prime minister could survive that.
Yeah.
So something has changed dramatically. That something obviously is Boris Johnson, his persona, his modus operandi, and the way he does things. And as I say, the thing speaks for itself. It's a degradation of British public sector life that will seep into other areas of life in Britain. If law breaking is countenanced from the very top, then God knows what the consequences of that are going to be. I fear I do know what those consequences will be, but I hope not.
His old Etonian contemporary, David Cameron, and indeed his Oxford contemporary as well, described him as being like a greasy piglet who always slips out of your grasp. It's not a bad description, is it?
It's pretty accurate, Eamon. It's certainly as good as anything I can come up with.
Okay, Chris. We're very grateful to you for joining us. And whilst he may cause us trouble here with the Northern Protocol, he is keeping the rest of the Irish nation somewhat amused. We're grateful to Chris, of course, as always, to all of you for listening. That's all we have time for now. We'll talk to you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.